From the studios of 2RBH in Sydney, this is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to this week. Bobby Troop, no relation to F Troop or his cousin Circus or even Scout. No, we're not killing any mockingbirds on this show. If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway. That's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. Written by Bobby Troop in 1946 whilst driving west to Los Angeles to seek his fortune. First made famous by Nat King Cole in the same year, then just about everybody else after that. Chuck Perry Como. Bing, and of course, the Rolling Stones. Well, that applies to us this week, 3,600 miles on Route 66 in a 1929 Model A Ford. Even the bad hotel beds were good on that journey. Now, if that wasn't good enough, British supercar maker McLaren are selling their dream factory in Woking. Well, 30 laps are awoke to that this week. And staying in the UK, let's go to the first electric forecourt. How can you drive a car named after Pepper? Is it hot? That's Cayenne in French Guiana, not as in Pepper, but let's take it as a condiment anyway. Cars named after places. Let's have a look at that as well this week. 30 laps. Okay, so from the online magazine Hegarty.com, 3,600 miles behind the wheel of a 1929 Model A on Route 66. Written by Philip Thomas, the 26th of August 2020. Context is everything, right? For modern traffic, Route 66 is a slow, constricted highway, especially when compared to the interstate highway system. For a 1929 Model A, Route 66 is just about the right speed. Just as time and technology ditched the horse and for the horseless carriage, those forces eventually bypassed Route 66 for an interstate highway. Communities built along the highway withered while the traffic flow was diverted, sometimes hundreds of miles away, to newly built freeways. Priorities for infrastructure had changed and no longer supported aging mining towns and farming communities. Instead, Eisenhower and his administration sought to funnel the masses and their goods between metropolises with military efficiency. Along the forsaken, recession-plagued byways of America, Route 66 became a martyr. Its meandering pavement is synonymous with the mystic of the open road, drawing those who crave an unpredictable journey and delight in driving for driving's sake. One such scenic traveller is Ryan Tebow, who has just been rattling and rumbling across from coast to coast in his 1929 Ford Model A for the past 2 weeks. I caught up with Tebow at the Cool Springs Station in western Arizona, a kitschy rest stop on the eastern side of the Black Mountains. The Model A putted off the road into the parking lot, and I leaned on the window frame of the Model A to introduce myself. Tebow had covered 3,200 miles thus far, and his attention was fixed on the 3,000-foot pass just ahead. He had been on the road for 11 days, and the push from Gallup, New Mexico to Needles, California had been among his toughest yet. The temperature highs through the southwest hovered above 115 degrees, pushing the Model A's nearly 100-year-old cooling system to its limits. The 30-year-old New Hampshire native behind the wheel was feeling the strain himself. "I have no idea how you guys live out here." "Well, we drink lots of water." The Model A seemed to agree with the strategy. As we wound up Sitgreaves Pass into Oatman, Arizona, it demanded several stops to refill the radiator, which was constantly boiling over.
"Say, boy, where you going? I saw you going down the street the other night. I wasn't going to where I hadn't been while I was going. You know, I should have latched on some of that good boogie woogie tonight. You mean some of that fat boogie? That's what I mean. Well, that's what I mean. Well, if you want to hear some boogie, then I know the place. It's just no piano and a knockout bass. The drummer man's got it on 8-beat back. Now you remember me, dog, and don't make me that slack. Man, it's better than chicken fried bacon grease."
Chicken fried bacon grease. You'd get all sorts of meals on the route, I reckon. Back to the story. In the past month, Tebow developed an entirely unexpected cult following in the automotive community. He was nearly 2 weeks into his road trip when a Facebook page he made for his friends and family to track his trip picked up serious momentum. More and more people began living vicariously through his updates and photos, logging each day's trip and the challenges it brought. "The people really surprised me, how outgoing they were and how willing they are to help. I've gotten hundreds of messages from the United States and all over the world from people that are watching," he explains. The story began with the search for a daily driver early Ford, as Tebow had owned quite a few over the years and had had several projects already. He scoured the internet until he stumbled upon this 29 Model A on Facebook Marketplace. The Model A had been restored decades prior and served as an older couple's runabout for several years, before it was parked roughly 10 years ago. The flathead 4 had been rebuilt with a counterweighted crankshaft, slightly heavier touring cam, and a higher compressor Brumfield head. Brumfield head, which helps it burn today's higher octane fuel. Beyond a few other minor tweaks, the old Model A was practically as pure as God and Henry Ford had intended. It still had three-speed manual, drum brakes, and no EFI. Ironically, its sole modern concession, the electronic distributor, represented Tebow's only real complaint on his cross-country trek. Its built-in timing curve isn't ideal for that particular motor, and it removes the driver's manual timing controls from the steering wheel. "I was looking for one that I could just leave outside and not worry about. Was pretty good mechanically, and that's really why I bought this one originally," Tebow recalls. "It's a good drive, which means I can look out for myself without having to worry mechanically too much. I like them pretty much original. I won't buy one that's been chopped or anything like that, but I'm not so crazy that it has to have the right spark plugs in for the period." Even though the idea of taking a Model A cross-country had filled it across his mind, Tebow could never have anticipated the circumstances that would create the opportunity for his cross-continental trek. His primary objective for the Model A was getting it sorted for trips around the Northeast to shows and swap meets. He'd never been beyond Pennsylvania, and he figured the Ford was a great foundation for a road warrior. Once the COVID-19 pandemic cleared his schedule of those planned events, he found himself with a fistful of vacation time and a road-ready Model A. He spent the first few days getting from New Hampshire to Route 66 Eastern Branch, which starts in Chicago. "I was pretty comfortable there because I had driven a different Model A to Hershey, Pennsylvania last year to a swap meet," he said. "I really didn't have any part of that section that I hadn't been on before, but I had to fix the carburetor on the second day. The base plate of the carburetor, an aluminium component, had warped and begun to leak between the intake and the carb. Tebow managed to use a file and flatten it enough for the time being. But I didn't make it too far, and I could smell something burning and hear a flapping noise. I lost the fan belt. I grabbed the spare that I'd bought, which was too big. Pure stupidity on my part not to double-check beforehand. After a little self-ribbing, he put the ravaged belt back on the old Model A and limped the car into a parts store in rural Ohio. Tebow managed to find a suitable replacement at another store and decided to stop at Snyder's Antique Auto Parts to pick up a rebuilt Zenith unit before the old one warped again. On the bright side, Tebow says, I've dealt with this shop for years, so it was kind of cool to make a personal connection and go down there. The Model A gripped only once more when the exhaust gaskets failed. I think that's griped, actually. The Model A griped, that makes more sense, only once more when the exhaust gaskets failed. Tebow managed to replace the upper gasket, but the lower collector gasket eventually blew out as well. There was no chance in hell, or at least Staunton, Illinois, of finding another. So he folded aluminium foil until it was thick enough to become a gasket. I checked the exhaust clamp's tightness every morning, now to keep it in check, he laughs. From there, the trip westward continued with only minor complaints from the Model A, mostly regarding cooling as it entered the desert mountains. Though the Ford tolerated 55 mile an hour speeds when it had to, specifically when interstates overlapped with the original route, it was most at home on Route 66 lower speed limits, which rarely break 45 miles an hour. As he pulled through each Route 66 town, word began to spread among the shop owners and historians dotting the old highway about this crazy dude driving across the country in the middle of summer in a pre-war Ford. With COVID-19 largely reducing tourist travel, this year has been especially tough on the 66 community. So the excitement spread quickly. I'm from a small town where the main route used to go through our downtown until the interstate came along. Once you lose your traffic, you lose your restaurants, your gas stations. So even though this happened before my time, I guess I feel it for the people, Tebow explains. I kind of have an understanding of what they go through. Tebow managed to complete Route 66 this past weekend, entering Santa Monica with 3,600 miles on his odometer. I was driving through Los Angeles traffic, so I didn't have a lot of time to think about it, but it felt good that I'd made it, he says. And it really was bittersweet, not because the trip was over yet, but because I'd enjoyed the people on Route 66 and the whole experience. Tebow turned north after Santa Monica to chase the Pacific Coast Highway before heading back east along the Oregon Trail, which is where he is at the moment. And folks, he's probably still on it, I guess. Even if you can't break free of responsibility and tackle thousands of miles of pavement yourself, his trip services as a reminder of what the fractured two-lane blacktops of yore can teach us. There's more to the world than you would see on the internet and from the comfort of the interstate. You've got to get out there and experience it for yourself. You watch the news and you think, America's really in a bad spot, Tebow says. If I go off what I've seen so far, I don't know where the news is getting their information from.
You've heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along.
Now, Model A's no Rocket 88. Google it. It's a magnificent looking thing from years ago. And we leave Mr. Tebow there, and we thank Philip Thomas for his article, which was on the online magazine Hecate.com. 3,600 miles behind the wheel of a 1929 Model A on Route 66.
Black convertible top and the gals don't mind. Sporting with me riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond, blow!
Ah, yes. Anyway, we move from Los Angeles to Woking. And from the Sydney Morning Herald drive.com.au on the 15th of September, this is written by Susanna Guthrie. British automotive brand McLaren has placed its UK headquarters up for sale to be priced in excess of £200 million, which is about 325 million Australian dollars, an effort to recoup funds amid dramatic decline in revenue. The Woking, Surrey site has been in McLaren's possession since 2004, but the company is hoping to sell it before the end of this financial year under a proposed sale and leaseback that could see McLaren become a tenant in its own HQ. According to Autocar magazine, a final sale price is yet to be determined, but a McLaren spokesman confirmed the company was expecting more than $200 million for the property, which is comprised of three buildings and 50 hectares of land. Marketing of the sale will be overseen by the property agent Colliers, with Sky News reporting the opportunity is expected to attract international property investors. The planned sale of the McLaren campus follows the supercar specialist announcing 1,200 staff redundancies in May 2020. In an effort to stay afloat during a financial downturn exacerbated by the coronavirus crisis. In July 2020, McLaren managed to secure £150 million loan from the National Bank of Bahrain after its application for a loan of the same amount from the British government was rejected. The potential sale and leaseback of our global headquarters and the appointment of banks to advise us on debt restructuring and equity raise are part of the comprehensive refinancing strategy that we announced earlier this year, a McLaren spokesman told Sky News. Building on the shorter-term measures that we put in place over the summer, these initiatives will deliver a stronger balance sheet and ensure McLaren has a sustainable platform for long-term growth and investment. The proposed sale and leaseback mirrors best practice among leading companies and will have no impact on our day-to-day operations. McLaren Campus, comprising McLaren Technology Centre, McLaren Production Centre and the McLaren Through Leadership Centre, is an iconic world-class facility that will remain our home in the future. Thank you to Suzanne Guthrie from Sydney Morning Herald Drive on the 15th of September for that little piece of news. We're staying with the American music from Route 66, and I think that's for fairly obvious reasons. Anyway, from motoringresearch.com, Gavin Braithwaite-Smith, to be precise, has written a story about cars named after places. Naming cars isn't straightforward. Firstly, there needs to suit the car in question. Ferrari Kangaroo, or Kangoo, I'm sorry, simply won't work. Then you need to check if anyone has already registered the name. It makes sense in different languages and whether it Googles well. No wonder some car makers settle for nondescript numbers such as 208 or 911. We've collated a list of the coolest place names used on cars. Let's start with the Ford Cortina, one of the most famous car names in Britain. But Cortina wasn't always destined to be named after the Italian ski resort. It started life as Project Archbishop and could have been called the Consul 225 or the Caprino, until someone realised the latter is a slang word for goat dung. Naming it after the host of the 56 Winter Olympics was a stroke of genius, as it injected a little glamour into the otherwise humble saloon car. Fortunately, Ford didn't use the 1960 Games as an inspiration. The Ford Squaw Valley just doesn't have the same effect. The Hyundai Santa Fe. Hyundai's breakout SUV V takes its name from the capital city of the American state of New Mexico. But don't be fooled. There is no semi-exotic pseudo-Latino runaround. The Santa Fe is a pedestrian and boring as a Hyundai SUV ought to be, albeit in later variations, a very capable one. The Austin Montegro. Haven't seen one of those on the road for a while. Anyway, by the mid-1980s, more and more people were experiencing air travel for the first time. With falling prices, the birth of the package holidays, with Judith Chalmers asking, "Wish you were here," whoever she is. This is an English thing, after all. The main driving forces behind the change, Austin Rover attempted to cash in on the nation's new horizons by naming its rather humdrum four-door sedan after a famous Jamaican tourist attraction. Now for something completely different. Alfa Romeo Montreal, oh la la. This is the most beautiful car ever to be named after an international exposition. The Alfa Romeo Montreal was originally shown as a styling exercise at Expo 67 in Montreal, before being launched as a production model in 1970. The original plan was for the World Exposition to be held in Moscow. Had that been the case, we believe Alfa would have looked elsewhere for a name. Yes. Another one for Ford Capri. To most people, the Capri made, and we all know about the Capri on 30 laps, don't we, folks? To most people, the Capri name made its debut in the hugely popular Car You've Always Promised Yourself of 1969. But the Capri badge dates back to the pretty Ford Consul Capri, the two-door coupe version of the classic saloon. Capri itself is an island off the coast of Italy at the south of the Gulf Naples. Seat Marbella. I think we've stopped seeing Seats in Australia for quite some time. Anyway, Spanish it is. Seat is proud of its Spanish origins, which is why it chooses the name of the majority of its cars after towns and cities and regions of the country. Ibiza, Arica, Arona, Leon, Toledo, and Marbella are all named after Spanish locations. Sadly, we've yet to see a Seat Benidorm or Magaluf. Skoda, the Skoda Kodiaq. The name of Skoda's large SUV took its inspiration from Kodiaq, a town situated on the Alaskan island of the same name. The island is home to 3,500 bears, which, according to Skoda, is perfectly apt for the large and powerful SUV with a protective nature, a strong sense of family, and a high degree of outdoor exercise. Kia Rio. Simon Le Bon and other members of Duran Duran loved their Kia Rio so much, they wrote a song about their escapades across the sand in the value-driven Korean hatchback. Well, at least they would have done had the song not predated the car's launch by some 18 years. Ah, yes, from the wonderful mixed music of the American South to the Triumph Dolomite. The Dolomite name was the first used by Triumph in a pre-war era, but is perhaps most famous for its use in the 1970s, most notably on the Dolomite Sprint. The Dolomites is a famous mountain range in the northern Italian Alps, numbering 18 peaks. And the one we used earlier, the Porsche Cayenne. Cayenne is the capital city of French Guiana, and the name given to the saviour of the European car company. You may not like the Cayenne, it's a volume seller by comparison to the likes of the beautiful 911, but it keeps Porsche profitable, which is good news for sports car fans. Yes, the Subaru in New Zealand, Subaru in Australia, Tribeca. Remember the Subaru Tribeca? It was never a big seller in the UK. It wasn't much of a big seller out here either. But it has a face you're unlikely to forget. Tribeca is a neighbourhood in New York City, so the choice of the name strikes us as being a little odd. No doubt Subaru was attempting to approach and promote the urbanness of its crossover vehicle. Even more strange was the Daewoo Le Mans, the most iconic name in automotive history, or proof that somebody at Daewoo had a sense of humour. The Le Mans was based on the old Mark II Astra, not the first car you'd associate with the famous 24-hour race. The Bentley Brooklands. The Brooklands, Blenheim and Mulsan, are just three examples of great Bentley names. It came up also with Bentayga, a word about the Brooklands name. Contrary to popular belief, the Ford Capri 280 was never officially named after the historic circuit. Instead, the name refers to the Brooklands green paint. Yeah, righto then. I think on that note, that might be enough of this insanity. Cars named after famous places. That about wraps it up, I think, for this week. We've been from Chicago, Illinois, to Los Angeles in a Model A Ford, some 3,600 miles. And we've enjoyed our trip too, apart from the carburetor and the drum brakes. I tried in vain to find a copy of Route 66, but was unlucky. Anyway, we played some great American early music instead. And we had a look at the new McLaren sale and lease back. They're going to buy it, sell it, and then lease it back from the new owners. That's the plan. And we looked at car names and famous places. I look forward to seeing or talking to you again next week. And I hope you've got time to join me for half an hour. Until then, in the words of Mr. Morrison, not Scott Morrison, keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel. Bye for now.